Okay, I'm going to do Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. Chapter 15, text 4. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tatatatravunapalavasyat balapasuno rubarena padayo spisachikan vikshavanaspatim muda smayamivahagra jamadi purusha. The primeval lord saw that the stately trees with their beautiful reddish buds and the heavy burden of fruits and flowers were bending down to touch his feet with the tips of their branches. Thus he smiled gently and addressed his elder brother. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So thank you all for being on. I always say, and I've heard this, that the audience is more important than the speaker. For without a speaker, there can be an audience. Without an audience, there can't be a speaker. So I'm here in Vrindavan now, and we should get regular sanghas without any problems. Somehow today, I had to reboot my computer somehow to activate the speaker on this. And I've been lecturing, as I've been doing for years, at 4 o'clock in my room. Really wonderful crowd of people coming. Okay, this is the third class I gave today because a Chinese yoga group also came. So I'm really having fun discussing this Leela because I got a whole new set of commentaries and notes to study. So Poganda, it means that Krishna is the age of 6, between 6 and 10. And simultaneously, many things happen. His body grows to the point where he's able to take care of the cows, which means go to the forest, which means the ability, both by the environment and his age, to exchange with more and more mature relationships, a greater variety of relationships, now his friendship, and then soon with the gopis. And before, Krishna was just a calf herd boy. Now he's at the age of 6. And the psychology that we see in the world is also reflected in is originally coming from Krishna in his rasa. And it's actually a principle of child rearing that a child to be happy and to mature properly in the age of Kumar until the age of 5, what it requires is freedom within reasonable parameters. Of growing up in the city where everything is a danger and the mother has, the child wants to eat things and explore things. You see in India, you know, the mother, you know, is in the fields and the child is, you know, learning. And the child wants to be an adult. So even a young child, it's so healthy if he learns to put on his own shoes, do his own things, the more. So this is really the psychology of a child. So similarly with Krishna, he's a calf herd boy, but he wants to become a cowherd boy. Now that he's getting a little bit older, and naturally there's a reluctance from his mother, out of love. But Krishna is very, very determined now that he's at the age of Poganda, at the age of six. He's very, very determined. See, a calf herd boy, there's two terms. There's Vraja and Vrindavan. So generally, the whole area is called Vraja, and the whole area is called Vrindavan. But in a technical way, Vraja is the township where Krishna lives, and Vrindavan is the forest, even though either name is suitable for the whole area where Krishna had his pastimes. So Krishna is eager to go to the forest and herd the cows. And because his parents had no choice, because the calves that Krishna was taking care of had now become grown, and the grazing is in the forest. So really, without really going to the forest, the cows will not eat properly, and they won't go without Krishna, because Krishna loves the cows so much. And this is really the essence of the spiritual reality. It seems far out, but according to our own experience, it's actually quite reasonable that if there is a God, there is a realm of love, and love is exchanged in multitude of relationships. And therefore, everything should be love. There's even an environmental aspect to this story, in the sense that Krishna loves the earth, because the earth is, it provides the sustenance and support of everything, and even everything that Krishna enjoys. Everything is coming from the earth. So Krishna has a love for the earth. And therefore, he wants to walk on the earth barefoot. Because in a spiritual sense, in an ultimate sense, auspiciousness is contact with God. And contact with God is a matter of attention and attitude. It's not just a physical thing, because everything is God's energy. God is everywhere. Quoted that philosopher, where there is no circumference, the center is everywhere. So God is everywhere. But how do we contact God? And when we contact God, there's auspiciousness, because the ultimate reality is that energy between us and God called love. We exist for relationship with God, because that is his supreme pleasure, is love, which means he needs a receptacle for his own energy to flow back towards him in love. And we are those receptacles. So when Krishna comes into the forest, it's so pleasing, and it's described as beautiful lakes, clear lakes. Actually, two things are required for proper regulation of temperature: lakes and the wind. And in Vrindavan, they cooperate, because the lakes have a cooling effect, and the wind carries that moisture. But the lake, it's very, very pleasant when you see a clear, peaceful lake. It is the lake where Krishna wants to enjoy. And therefore, that lake is compared to the mind of a great soul, where Krishna wants to enjoy. Krishna wants to enter into that mind of the person who is clear and pure. So Krishna is heading to the forest, and the contact with Krishna gives everything life. That's why I said preaching. The Prabhupada said preaching is life. Why is preaching life? Because when you preach, when you speak, you have to think very carefully about what to say in relationship to Krishna. So it's a great Krishna Anushilanam. It's a great practice of devotion. But this contact is the goal of life. Because the goal of life is priti, and priti means love, and highest love is love of God because it's universal. And that contact, it creates the energy of happiness called love. Love makes the world go round, which is the foundation and basis of everything. So this pastime is very, very beautiful, as Krishna will give a picture. In your minds, you can see that beautiful picture that Krishna is playing his flute. And actually the word here is udiran, which means ut is a Sanskrit term for loud. It means stretch. Utkanta means enthusiasm, a stretched neck, just like it's a metaphor for the bird, the young bird is stretching for a worm, is the symbol of enthusiasm so the enthusiastic kirtan, the loud kirtan. The loud kirtan is for others. So when Krishna plays his flute, he can play it for himself, or he can play it loud. So he's playing it for others to express his joy for their association as he's coming into the forest of Vrindavan, where there are bees and birds and animals are making sounds. Actually, when there is happiness, there is sound. When there is happiness, there is singing. When there is happiness, there is talking. So there's happiness because Krishna is coming. And the bees are mentioned first, because particularly Krishna enjoys the sweet sounding of the bees. Although the birds just don't sing in one tune, the birds in Vrindavan can sing in any way they want for the pleasure of Krishna. So Krishna is entering into the forest with his cows, and he goes barefoot to reciprocate with the forest of Vrindavan. And he plays his flute, which expresses his love for the devotees. Coward boys are feeling so much love that they begin to dance and chant and play musical instruments. Especially they go out into the forest with drums that have treble and bass and stick on either side. And then they go into the forest, and sometimes they see a particular type of leaf where they can roll it up and blow through it and create a beautiful sound imitating Krishna's flute. So it's so joyous. And Krishna goes into the forest, and there is not a grain of sand in all of Vrindavan which Krishna has not touched with his lotus feet. How is it possible? Because God is all powerful and has unlimited capacity to reciprocate with those whom he has a relationship. So he's blowing his flute. He's not the bara. He's dancing. Krishna is Adi Kalatra, Adi Guru Kalatra. He's the original guru of all the arts. If you want to learn something, you have to have a guru. If you don't have a guru, you are limited by your own frame of reference. If there is no authority in a subject to teach you, you are on your own, which generally limits you to an experimentation in the confines of your own limited frame of reference. So therefore, someone who really, really wants to learn something surrenders to guru. And that guru had a guru, and that guru's guru had a guru, and that guru had a guru. And it goes back until there is the original guru, and that's Krishna. So of all the arts, like dancing, there's a guru who has a guru. And the Adi guru is Krishna, so he's the most excellent dancer. So he's dancing while he is playing his flute. The cowherd boys respond in singing. And he enters the forest of Vrindavan, Rasavai Saha, which has relationship with Krishna, and is reciprocating with Krishna for his pleasure. Krishna's pleasure is love, but love is communicated through the mind and the senses. If you love someone, you try to please them. And where there is true love, there is beauty, because love means to offer the best. So all the senses of Krishna are stimulated with the intention of pleasing him. So through that experience, he drinks the love of the devotees of Vrindavan. There's fragrance in Vrindavan for his pleasure. There's sounds in Vrindavan for his pleasure. There's beautiful gardens that he can see for his pleasure. So all the senses are communicating to Krishna, we love you. And therefore we love everything. And as Krishna goes into that forest, one thing particularly that's really of interest and is a very, very instructive example for us in many, many ways, Krishna has special fondness for the trees. And he has special fondness for the trees because, one, they have an inability to move and follow him. So it's kind of like a compassion in one sense for the trees. But also the trees are the exemplar of devotees. It's not just that ignorant souls get born in, as trees in Vrindavan, but it says that great perfected souls take birth as trees in Vrindavan, to set an example for the sadhaka. Well, what is the example of the tree? If you want to please Krishna, what do you give him? You give him love. And how's that love expressed? That's explained in the Bhagavad Gita, patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta priyachati. If one loves me, he offered me in love a fruit, a flower, a leaf, a water, I will accept it. So three out of the four things that are the suitable offerings for Krishna come from the trees. And that's what Vrindavan is. The trees are blossoming with fruits and flowers and beautiful leaves and to decorate Krishna and food and so many wonderful things. And Krishna accepts. One of the greatest experiences of happiness is accepting someone else's love that is expressed in service and offering. Or better than that, is the greatest experience of love is having your service and offering accepted by the object of your love. Just think of the person in your life who you love the most. And the pleasure you got from their acceptance of your offering of love. That's actually priti. Priti means love. It is the piyojana. It is the goal of life. And what is that priti? It's when your happiness becomes the enjoyment of another. That is love. When your happiness is the enjoyment of another. So the trees are offering and Krishna is accepting in love. Not only is he accepting in love, but he's accepting from every fruit, every flower, every leaf in Vrindavan that grows is personally accepted by Krishna. And how does he personally accept it? Well, he's all powerful. It is possible. So Vrindavan means the ocean of the offering of love and the ocean of the acknowledgement and acceptance of that love. And not only does Krishna accept each fruit, it's not when that incident passes, it becomes obliterated by time. It exists eternally. Every event in the spiritual world exists eternally. It's like the sun rises in the morning at dawn and sets at dusk. But when the sun moves past dawn to our perspective, it is dawn someplace. All phases of the sun exist simultaneously at the same time. It is 6 o'clock somewhere at all times in the universe. It's 7 o'clock at all times. So in the same sense, even though the activities move on, they're also existing. And that bhav of the object of Krishna, the most attractive force and object of intense love, has accepted my gift. So the trees, they're offering. And they're humble. And they bow. And they offer what is on the top of their heads, on the top of the trees, they offer it to Krishna. And Krishna somehow or other deflects that praise. And he starts talking as if it's being offered to Balaram. Because Krishna is also setting the example of what is proper behavior. And proper behavior is not to have entitlement and possessiveness. The false ego is based on a sense of superiority. And therefore, we like to be praised. Because when we are praised, It increases our status. And if our status is increased, it increases our power. And if our power is increased, it increases our control. And the more we can control, the more we have the sense. Control means enjoy, because the only reason you control something is to enjoy it. And that's our sense of superiority. So that's not our objective. So Krishna sets the example. He deflects the praise and deflects the sense of entitlement and possessiveness. So the trees are setting the example of offering everything for the pleasure of Krishna. Okay, let me go on to the next verse. I tried to say something. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O greatest of lords, this is 5, just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet, which are worshipable by the immortal demigods. The trees are offering you their fruits and flowers to eradicate the dark ignorance that has caused their birth. So they're lamenting their ignorance, that they're immobile and they can't move towards Krishna. But there's other ways to interpret this verse, and the great acharyas have said, they're not offering fruits and flowers to Krishna to eradicate their ignorance as much as to eradicate ours, because perfected souls set the example. And this is the example of the perfected soul. The mood of servant, the mood of offering. That's the perfected soul. So we'll read the next verse. Original personality, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshiping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. Though you've disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. So the bees are great sages because Kayanta, they're always chanting, and therefore they become Tirtha. The word Tirtha comes from the word Tarati, and I think this word Tarati means to transcend and move to liberation, that which can elevate the consciousness. So there are places that can elevate the consciousness. There are people that can elevate the consciousness. There are forms that can elevate the consciousness. There are messages that can elevate the consciousness. And especially there is mantras and kirtan that can elevate the consciousness. And specifically, kirtan is very, very powerful because it's a form of purification that can come to you and enter into your heart. Well, really what kirtan is, you see, the bees, they must be great sages because this is what great sages do. Chant your glories, and therefore the holy place for pilgrims. So this is what great souls do. And this is the power of kirtan, The best definition I've heard of kirtan is one nice devotee in New York called Satya Hari. He wrote an article about kirtan. It's when the bhava in the heart is expressed through the discipline of music. So it begins with bhava, and the expression of it is the emotion of bhava reformed in sound. So when you listen to kirtan chanted by someone with bhava, someone who chants, that's what the pure name means. It means it's an expression of love that becomes that love embodied. And if you are receptive to receive it, that same love comes in your heart and elevates you. So the bees are following Krishna and Gudham. It means although they are hidden, although this is Naralila and God manifests in his Swayam Bhagavan form, his original form, he manifests as Krishna and Balaram, that's who he is, but his majesty is hidden. The way we normally ascribe a characteristic to identify God, majesty is hidden. It's in disguise. They have disguised themselves. They've disguised their majesty. And because they have disguised their majesty, it is very easy not to recognize their majesty or their greatness. But the bees, they're following Krishna. They must be great souls because they understand that this is actually the fullest manifestation of God. That Akila Rasamrita Murti, the full embodiment of relationships, can only manifest when God is not covered by his majesty or position. Okay, I mean, this was my third class today, so maybe I don't have as much energy as I do, but if anyone wants to ask any questions, I'm willing to answer any questions.
Hi Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Hi Bob. Yeah, Gail.
Yeah, there was just one part of your talk that I just needed you to repeat. I'm not able to repeat it well because I needed you to repeat it. You were saying something like when we're offering something out of love and then it comes back to us.
Love ultimately is an energy of God. Ultimately, love is an energy of God. It's his internal potency. It's his pleasure potency. Ladini Shakti, the essence of his Krishna praying. So it is an energy of God, but how does he enjoy that energy? He enjoys that energy when it flows towards him. So our hearts are receptacles to that love, That is basically why we are created. According to the Upanishads, it says, Eko Bahu Sham, the one became many. So what is this many about? For what purpose? To be receptacles of love. Otherwise, if there's no love, then God can just remain Brahman. But he expands into his differentiated parts and parcels, basically to enjoy love. And love must come to you from outside yourself, although nothing is outside of God, but within God, he's created us to be, in one sense, outside of himself so that we can give him love. So the way bhakti actually works is that when one has an intense desire to serve, and that feeling of love becomes very, very intensified, then God gives one the facility to please him, which is his own love. And that's what bhava means. When you attain the stage of bhava, it's described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you come to a point of exclusive desire to serve and love Krishna. And that attracts Krishna's energy, and it descends on the consciousness. Bhava means the descent of the Ladini Samvit potency, of the cognitive and pleasure potency on one's consciousness. So we're receptacles for that. But the problem is our hearts are not clean and they are not proper receptacles for it. Okay?
Yeah, the only thing that this explanation inspired me to ask, though, is that since love is Krishna's energy and it descends upon us as receptacles to give him back that love, when he is inspired by our love to give that love that we're exhibiting, that exclusive, intense desire to please Krishna that attracts him. Yeah. Where is that coming from? It's like a chicken or the egg type thing, it seems like to me.
Well, let's put it this way. We have a seed of devotion within our hearts, but it needs water. So maybe Krishna's energy could look like water. That it doesn't fruitify in itself. It requires the energy of God. That's one way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
We're part of God. We have a potentiality. I look at it is that we have a seva bhava, a desire to serve. So maybe we can look at it as love with a small L and love with a capital L. The love with a capital L is actually God's internal potency. So we have a capacity to love. And that's pleasing to Krishna. But the real pleasure of Krishna is his own energy, which is bestowed upon our consciousness. It's described like you put an iron rod in fire, the iron rod becomes fire. So our consciousness and our desire to serve attracts Krishna's energy until it becomes one with our consciousness. Like the fire becomes one with the metal. It's called tadatmaka. It becomes one. And then our consciousness is glowing with prema, with the highest form of love. Okay?
Yes, that sounds great. And you said it's called tadatmaka? Tadatmaka?
Tadatmaka means to become one with.
I mean, can like you spell it, please? I can't hear.
Tadatmaka. 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 To become one.
Okay. Thank you so
anybody
much.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Tota Gopinath here.
Ishwari Radha.
Okay. Wow, okay, great. Few more?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Chicken Narvika here.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Great. A few more? Okay. Sorry I was late today, but I have to go somewhere. Who's that?
Sebastian and Jimena.
Oh, Haribo. Haribo. Thank you. Okay. See you soon. Okay. Who's that?
This is Brother Abhi.
Haribo. Haribo. I was giving class someplace else, and I had a class before. So this is the third class. So it kind of, I'll probably have to go now. Okay, thank you all.